The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. I call this the Empowerment Hour. I can promise you, no matter where you live, no matter what your education, your background, your specialization, you will learn a great deal that you did not know, all of which is important to making better choices for the future. My guest in the second part of our program will be Jean Carper. She's a leading journalist in medical issues, and she's going to talk about preventing Alzheimer's disease, dementia, and age-related memory losses. I'm going to ask Marie McGovern, if you're listening, to call in during that segment so you can share with Jean your recovery, your story. Also, I want those who just finished our health support group last week, three of whom had reversed multiple sclerosis, to call in. And Kenny from New Jersey, who reversed multiple sclerosis. And by the way, this is not them saying this. This is where their doctors and their x-rays and all their scans show that they have no more pathological activity. They cannot be diagnosed with the disease that they had before they started the health support group. I thought it would be nice to hear what she has to say and then to listen to what the people in this audience have to say, but that'll be in a half hour from now. So wait till then to call in. The latest on the environment, and I think a very good piece by Robert Herbert called The Corrosion of America, dealing with our water and how we get it, pipes and reservoirs and dams, and why we need a change of policy. I'll deal with that. And I'm going to give you the latest on health nutrition now, and it starts with something that impacts our brain. Parkinson's disease. This says metal, simple metals like lead and cadmium and other metals, aluminum, pollution tied to Parkinson's. Quote, people living near a steel factory or any source of high manganese emissions are at a higher risk of developing Parkinson's disease. As many as 1 million Americans live with the degenerative disease, according to the Parkinson's Disease Foundation. Pesticides from farms have long been suspected for upping the chances of developing Parkinson's, but much less is known about the influence of city living. Quote, environmental risk factors for Parkinson's disease have been relatively understudied, especially in urban areas, where the overwhelming majority of Parkinson's disease patients reside. This is according to the Washington University School of Medicine professor on this. Now, my thoughts on this. One of the very first protocols that everyone that I work with undergoes is a heavy metal analysis. I want them to have the metals in their body checked. I also do viral panels and bacterial panels to see what I'm dealing with, so at least I have a better chance of helping a person design a protocol that will meet their needs. Without exception, every single one of the people who have any form of neurological or memory losses or dementia have elevated levels of mercury. Getting the silver mercury out of their mouth, the fillings in their mouth, one of the very first things that happens. In fact, one of the very first times this was very obvious, a doctor came to see me. He had been an Nassau doctor for many, many years, decades, in fact. Just a regular practitioner, not holistic, but he had some very severe problems with his health, and he found that nothing worked within orthodox medicine. So he went to a doctor in Connecticut, Dr. Marshall Mandel, who now lives in Florida, and retired, and Dr. Mandel did a simple test, and he filmed it. I'm glad he filmed it, because otherwise it'd be kind of hard for a regular Orthodox doctor to accept this. But he asked the person to sit and stand, with a clock behind him, and then to walk this little, maybe 15-foot room and back. And then he brought over some vials, and he would take a single drop, one drop, and put it in the person's mouth, under the tongue. And then he said, sit back down. And then for about 15 of these vials, nothing happened. The guy would sit down, he'd stand up, he'd walk. But then one of these vials, a drop was put under his tongue, and he couldn't get up. He was wobbly, like he was drunk. And you see him trying to maintain his balance, just walking about 15 feet. He couldn't do it. It took about 20 minutes for him to neutralize this out of his system so he could regain his balance. So they took down the number on the bottom of the vial and mixed all the bottles up again, and he did it again. And again, one of these vials, which was the same one, but no one knew it till they looked at the numbers, and it was beef, an extract of beef. That's all, just an extract. And when he eliminated all beef from his diet, his swelling, his arthritis cleared up. His wife, the doctor's wife, had a very severe irritable bowel syndrome. She also found that she was allergic. And when she cleaned up her diet, she too eliminated irritable bowel syndrome. Jump ahead 1 year. I'm doing a major conference of all the holistic cancer doctors in America. And I brought them all in, and Dr. Issel from Germany and Lawrence Burton from the Bahamas as well, at a high school for a whole day, and it's packed. Fortunately, we filmed it. And a woman came up to me and she said, I am the daughter of this doctor, but nothing's been able to help me. You know, I've tried different diets, doesn't work. I've got multiple sclerosis, and she had crutches. So I said, okay, I don't have time today because I'm hosting all this, and as you see, there's 1,000 people here. I said, but come to my office tomorrow or Monday and I'll help you. And she did. And as she's talking, I see this silver in her mouth. And I said, how many silver fillings do you have? She said, I don't know. So we looked and she found that she had like 17 silver fillings. So I recommended that she have her silver fillings removed and porcelain put in their place. And then I put her on a chelation program, assuming that there was heavy metals, to have a 5-day-a-week chelation program. 1 week later, 1 week, she comes back in the office and she says, I can't believe this. I said, what? She said, I have strength back in my muscles. I have coordination. I have to get them toned again. But she said, I actually can feel my muscles again. I'm not falling over. I'm not losing my balance. Before I felt like a limp doll. I had no muscle strength at all. She said, is it possible that just in 1 week of chelation and getting rid of the mercury fillings, this would happen? And I said, well, I haven't seen this something this quick, but can the body rebalance itself? Yes. Each person, it's different, how long it takes and what's involved. But later, she would completely reverse her multiple sclerosis. And 2 years later, she came to a lecture I was giving, and she was just like a different human being. A full developed musculature system, no more imbalance. And yet, those type of situations have happened time and again. That's why I'm doing this new health support group. Next week, we'll be having our first full meeting where the actual protocols will be given. So people with MS, Parkinson's, ALS, Alzheimer's, dementia, memory loss, and also depression and anxiety disorders are invited to attend that. Now, you'll call our number if you wish to attend, and it's a 6-month study group, and you must be able to provide proof that you have some form of brain or neurological disorder. That's the key. A lot of people feel they do, but they haven't had the medical diagnosis. 877 627 5065, 877-627-5065, if you wish to attend that. But it's interesting, that study shows, yeah, there's a relationship between heavy metals and Parkinson's. Well, there's a relationship between heavy metals and Alzheimer's, heavy metals and ALS, heavy metals and multiple sclerosis. Get the metals out through natural chelation. What's the best way of natural chelation? Green vegetable juices. You take 6 ounces of wheatgrass juice a day, 1 ounce 6 times. That's a powerful way to chelate out. Now, if you take it with vitamin C, you're increasing your chelation of heavy metals. If you're a healthy person, you should be doing this to prevent heavy metals from building up in your system. Brisk walking will lower your blood, your breast cancer risk. As you know, yesterday I did a very comprehensive analysis of estrogens and why you don't want estrogen dominance. Stress, being overweight, pesticides, eating meat, dairy, will increase your estrogen. That's a bad thing. Vegetables, especially cruciferous vegetables like broccoli, lower that estrogen and allow more progesterone. Well, we want to help the women do it the natural way. So this is something that's good. Walking, brisk walking, power walking, will not only help your overall musculature, but lowers the development of breast cancer after menopause. They reviewed 100,000 postmenopausal women and found those women who scheduled at least an hour of brisk walking a day were 15% less likely to develop breast cancer. Now imagine if you got 15% to the positive side by walking. What about juicing? 2 or 3 glasses of fresh juice a day. That drops at another 50%. What about taking nutrients? So like curcumin and vitamin C lowers it even more. There's no reason for any woman to have breast cancer. This was published in the Archives of Internal Medicine, done at Harvard University. Higher potassium levels. Now, you'll get higher potassium, by the way, with your juices, especially your fruit juices, like pineapple juice, papaya juice, mango juice, pomegranate juice. The higher the potassium, the lower the risk of diabetes. This was published in the Archives of Internal Medicine, and it shows that work done at Johns Hopkins University, 11,530 participants in the atherosclerosis risk community study, those who have the highest potassium in the diet have the lowest risk of diabetes. Well, that's good. And just remember, sodium causes an inverse relationship with potassium. So when you're on a high sodium diet, which is pizzas and junk foods and french fries, you will reduce potassium in your body, and that's not good. And now, one last thing. We've all heard of the placebo studies and how, if you take a careful look, a lot of the important studies have shown that placebo works just as well as the medication. That's especially true with the antipsychotic medication, antidepressant medication. Here's the latest. This is from Mike Adams, and I was just up in production at our editing facility upstairs here, and I was watching Mike. He's in our new film, Death by Medicine, which is being finished today, and then we will see when we're going to air it. It's 4 years. It's all over as of today for this. It's really important film. You can't help but watch this and not say something about what's wrong with medicine. Here's what Mike says. I'll quote him. You know all those thousands of clinical trials conducted over the last few decades comparing pharmaceuticals to placebo pills? Well, it turns out all of those studies must now be completely thrown out as utterly non-scientific. And why? Because the placebos used in the studies weren't really placebos at all, rendering the studies scientifically invalid. This is a conclusion from researchers at the University of California who published their findings in the October issue of the Annals of Internal Medicine. They reviewed 167 placebo-controlled trials published in peer-reviewed literature and medical journals in 2008 and 2009 and found 92% of those trials never even describe the ingredients of their placebo pills. Now, why is this important? Because placebo pills are supposed to be inert. But nothing is inert, it turns out. Even so-called sugar pills contain sugar. And sugar is not inert. If you're running a clinical trial on diabetics, testing the effectiveness of a diabetic drug versus a placebo, then obviously your clinical trial is going to make the diabetes drug look better than the placebo if the sugar pills are what you used in your placebo. Some placebo pills use olive oil, which may actually improve heart health. Other placebo pills use partially hydrogenated oils, which harm your health of your heart, yet only 8% of clinical trials bothered to list the ingredients. Now, stay with me on this placebo issue because it gets even more bizarre. There are no FDA rules regarding placebos in clinical trials. Turns out there is absolutely no FDA rules regarding the choice or composition of placebos used in clinical trials. Technically, a clinical trial director could use anything, lizard legs, or as placebo, and would not even be required to mention such nefarious details in the trial results. That would cause trouble, and more trouble. So what he's saying is that all these drug trials are really faked, and they would have had to have known this because they would have had to have known that placebos are not inert. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment to take on some issues of the environment. Please stay with us. Like say hello to everyone throughout the world who is listening. We have a lot of people in France at the Sorbonne. There's a whole group that gets together each day and listens and does an analysis and a discussion group after the topics that we discuss. And we thank them for tuning in. We have a lot of young people listening. In fact, I've had the largest increase, over 340%. That's astronomical. Between a Arbitron book for winter and one for spring this past year on WPFW. That's the largest increase as a percentage in the station's history for any show. In fact, a 340% increase in audience for any show would be off the charts. Then we did more research and found it was mainly young people in their teens and 20s and 30s. So we thank you for coming on board. Now, a couple things on the environment, and our guest is going to talk about natural approaches to Alzheimer's in a little bit. This is something I mentioned over a year ago. This is from Peter Gleick, and it deals with the National Academy of Sciences and their official proceedings. And it says, fresh water is fundamental for maintaining human health and agricultural production and economic activity and critical ecosystem functions. But as populations and economies grow, new constraints on water resources are appearing, raising questions about ultimate limits to water availability. Such resource questions are not new. The specter of peak oil, a peaking and then declining in oil production, has long been predicted and debated. A recent paper that I authored in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences with colleague Meenan Palaniniappan offers three concepts of peak water: peak renewable water, peak non-renewable water, and peak ecological water, and it looks like the U.S. has passed all three peaks. Now, peak renewable water applies where flow constraints limit total water availability over time. Peak non-renewable water is observable in groundwater systems where production, water rates substantially exceed natural recharge rates, where you overpump the water out of the ground. Where you, let me give you an example. You may be in a community that all share the same aquifer. Let's say you have 1 million people, and when you turn on the water each day, that water comes from that aquifer. That's non-renewable. There's so much there, and when it's gone, it's gone. The water that comes from the rain is not enough to recharge, bring it back up. And right now, in Lake Mead, the water is 8 feet from where they go into an emergency rationing in all of Nevada and all of New Mexico, because that's a principal source of their water. Well, when all those developers were putting in all those big housing complexes and those mega farms, no one did their basic homework. How much water is available? Is it unlimited? No, it's limited. And now, all of you living in Mexico and all of in New Mexico and all of you living in Arizona and Nevada, you're going to end up with water rationing, I predict, within a year. So just wanted to let you know that these watersheds and the water comes from stocks of water that are effectively non-renewable. They go into groundwater aquifers. Got to pay attention, because without water, there is no future for you in that area. That's why I've made it number one priority when I seek out a homestead. Look for the water. I went back 60 years in the water tables, water usage, and found in one property, I don't know if I'll be able to get it or not, they have to come down in price, but the water is Jurassic water. It's a spring that will never go out, and it's all fresh and all pure. That's what I look for. That's what you should look for. Good news, offshore wind could generate all of U.S. electricity. Now, this is something you haven't heard. Quote, U.S. offshore winds, abundant off the coasts of 26 states, have the potential to generate 4 times as much power as the nation's present electric capacity. That's according to a new study by the Department of Energy. Developing this resource would help the United States reduce air pollution, achieve 20% of its electricity, or about 55 gigawatts from the wind, and create more than 40,000 permanent, well-paid technical jobs. That's all in this Department of Energy's National Renewable Energy Laboratory. So we should be putting our political will behind this. This is what should be subsidized, not the nuclear industry, the coal industry, the oil industry, or the gas industry. And finally, you've heard me talk about our corroding infrastructures. We could be putting our money, instead of in the corrupt and fraud, completely wasted effort in Iraq and Afghanistan and Iran, Pakistan, it's all worthless. No good will come from there. If we put that money into rebuilding America's infrastructure, that would put people to work. It would give us security for the future, as far as our water and our electric and our rail system. We should be having right now trains that go 300 miles an hour from Boston to Miami, from Chicago to Houston and Dallas. We could crisscross this country with trains that would make a lot of trucking and car driving and flying obsolete. That's where our resources should go. We're not doing it. Is there the technology? Yes. Right now, there's technology for 250-mile-an-hour trains. And we could do it. We just don't have the political will to. In that context, this is something from Bob Herbert, The Corrosion of America. I'll quote this short. If you had a leak in your roof or in the kitchen or basement, you'd probably think it's a good idea to take care of it before it gets worse or more expensive. If only we had the same attitude when it comes to the vast and intricately linked water system in the United States. Most of us take clean and readily available water for granted. But the truth is the nation's water systems are in sorry shape, deteriorating even as the population grows and demands increases. Aging corroded pipes are bursting somewhere every couple of minutes. Dilapidated sewer systems are contaminating waterways and drinking water. Many local systems are so old and inadequate, in some cases so utterly rotten, that they are overwhelmed by heavy rain. There was a report for decades these systems, some built around the time of the Civil War, have been ignored by politicians and residents accustomed to paying almost nothing for water delivery and sewage removal. And so each year, hundreds of thousands of ruptured, damaged streets and homes and cause dangerous pollutants to seep into drinking water supplies. There is, of course, no reason for this to be the case. If this were a first-class society, we would rebuild our water systems to the point where they would be the envy of the world, and that would bolster the economy and the bargain. But that would take maturity and vision and effort and sacrifice, all of which are in dismayingly short supply right now. We can't even build a railroad tunnel beneath the Hudson River. And I agree. I believe we should be putting our resources into our infrastructure. Joining me in studio is Kara Lee. Hi, Kara.
Good afternoon, Gary. Well, first of all, I just wanted to say to everyone out there who's listening, you know, with our audience growing and everything, Gary does have a podcast. So if you can't always listen to every show live, or if you just want it automatically uploaded into your computer every day, you can just search on iTunes, the Progressive Radio Network, or the Gary Knoll Show, and you'll see the show right there, and you can subscribe, and it appears automatically every day. So just take note of that.
Now, we're filming. We're streaming live over the video so people can watch this show. Does that go up on iTunes also, or is it just the audio?
No, I believe just the audio goes up.
Okay.
Yeah, there is also video streaming. If you go to the Progressive Radio Network, there's a button right there that says click to watch live.
Okay.
So, Gary, I do have a couple emails and a couple phone calls, actually, that came my way. And the first one I thought was really interesting. It was from a person who decided to stay anonymous. It was just an email I got from Washington, D.C., and they say they listen live on WPFW and over the Internet. He says he has a friend, and the think tanks and his friends, he's involved with the political system and some of the people around there, his friends are think tanks, and together they get together and they listen and they talk to the show. They talk about your show and all the shows on the Progressive Radio Network. And he says that in his opinion and his friends, they believe that Progressive Radio Network has made Pacifica obsolete, which I think is a really great compliment. He said, as we started listening to the programs on PRN, nothing has come close to its content. He says, why is nobody talking about the theft of land in third world nations? He says that he and his agency has documented how severe the land theft is, and yet they can't go public with it because of politics. They said that more than 45 million hectares of land hectares has been privatized. That's twice the size of France. And he says not a word has been talked about it. And he wants to know what your thoughts are on this matter.
All right, well, he's raised 3 points. I'll address the one. I am on Pacific. I'm on PFW in Washington and have been for 25 years. I'm on 6 hours every Wednesday morning on Pacific at KPFK in Los Angeles for 25 years. And I was on BAI for 27 years and 4 months. There was a time when Pacifica as a whole entity was very progressive. And then it became very politicized, and most of the best of the progressive minds, both in management and local station boards, and went elsewhere, became too contentious. There are some good shows, and they deserve an opportunity to exist. I never like to feel, if you ever watch me out, when I finish a race, I always go over and stand and cheer all the other athletes who are still in the race in. I don't even go to the awards and get my medals when I've won over 600 running races, or races, running and race walking. So if someone says, you know, they listen to Progressive Radio Network and it is so much better than something else, there's no need for the it's much better. My hope is that programmers on Pacifica stations or even on NPR will listen to what we're doing and work cooperatively to say, well, gee whiz, Look at the guests they have. You don't hear them, don't see them elsewhere. Look at how they take their time and analyze a story. They don't rush it. There's not this 3.5 minutes is what you get when you're on one of the shows. They're not limiting themselves. And they're not bringing the same tired cast of characters like Keith Olbermann and the others have. Same people. You know what they're going to say. And I'll give you a challenge. When was the last time you remembered anything any of them said? Right? Because they're not really there to challenge systems or to provide great insight. That's what Progressive Radio Network does. We have brought people on the air who are willing to challenge the system but come up with positive information. People want empowered today. They want to know something they didn't know and what they can do about it. That's what's important. So I'm thankful that they said that. Now to the larger issue. When you look at a major crisis, and I've been talking about this, I believe that we should start as individuals working by ourselves or with other like-minded people to get land that we can hold for a period of time until we're ready and capable and qualified enough to work that land. And we can do this with all the technology, green technology that's available to us today. We can do something completely off the grid. For example, my home in Florida, it has solar, all the water, the swimming pool, 100%, and it keeps it heated, and enormous savings. You can do this, and this is not difficult to do. But we're not, as a nation, we're not moving to a let's do something good because we're waiting for someone else to do it for us. The government or big business or the Democrats or Republicans. Well, unfortunately, neither the Democrats nor Republicans as a group, there's certainly individuals on both sides who would like to see things better, but they're not with a group who are independent enough to make positive changes. For example, we all have to eat. As long as you see food on the shelves or abundance of produce at a market, you think, what's the problem? I don't see a problem. I don't see a deficiency of lettuce or tomatoes. Maybe a little more or less expensive, depending upon if there's rain or flooding or drought. But because we can bring food in from all over the world, you know, we have cherries from Chile in the wintertime and grapes from South America and or South Africa, for that matter. We just pay for it. Those days are coming to an end, at least for about 70% of Americans. But it's much worse if you're in a developing land. Here's what happens. Let's say that you are a population of 2,000 people, and you are one of maybe 100 villages, and each village has about 2,000 or 3,000 people. So you're dealing with about 500,000 people or more in your area. Now, you're poor, but at least you all do something in common. You farm your land, which you own, but you share, you barter. So if you grow sweet potatoes and your neighbor grows grapes, you exchange. So everybody has a lot of different food to eat and plenty of it. What's happening now is Wall Street has gone in to these major countries in Africa, Mozambique, and South America, and they're buying up enormous tracts of land. But it's always, not always, it's the majority of the land they buy are in countries where there are no regulations. They either bribe the officials, or where there's no government oversight, where there's no rules at all. You can do anything you want with your land. Well, one of the very first things they do is they say, where's the most fertile land? Okay, this valley. Well, but you got 500,000 people living there. Okay, get rid of them. Well, how do we do that? No problem. The government goes in there and confiscates their land, throws them off their land. Now, one of two things happens. Either the land stays in a 99-year lease where they won't farm it for a while. It'll just stay like it is. Or they'll go in and they'll plant a single crop. And these are all speculators. You won't know who they are. You won't know what big groups are behind them. But these are massively financed groups. Now, they're buying up tens of millions of acres of land in areas to grow crops. Now, a lot of this started out of Saudi Arabia that doesn't have farmland. A lot of those countries don't have farmland. Like Lebanon has a lot of farmland, but Syria doesn't. Israel doesn't. Iran does in some areas. Now, Afghanistan has in some areas, but it's grown in poppies. But land for food is scarce. So they go to a country that has land and they buy it. And then the people who are there can't use that land. So when a farm comes in, the money goes to the government, which are corrupt and never trickles down to the people. And the people are just pushed further away. And so the people now are hungry. They're destitute. Now they have no food and they're poor. They have no money. And this is being done all over the place. Now, in some places, they're doing it like China has bought land in areas of Russia. Now, Russia is the largest continent in the world and largest nation in the world with the largest amount of fertile land in the world. You could put the United States twice into Russia in its fertile belt. And before the country split up, you could put almost North and South America there. That's how big it was when you consider the Ukraine and... In any case, very rich soil. But now other countries coming in and buying it or leasing it. But that's only for their use. But now the speculators have come in. Speculators don't care about growing anything. They care about controlling the land. So knowing that land's going to be scarce, food's going to be scarce, so whoever controls the land that is fertile and the seeds then controls food. If you control food, you control a population. This is all about Wall Street. Getting richer than what it is. So we should know, who are these companies? Who are these people? Why are they buying this? I could understand if Saudi Arabia went to a country and says, we'd like to build a 1 million acre farm, and we will hire only people from the area to work the farm, and we will not displace them from their homes, and we will give a percentage whatever they need to eat from this, and it'll be diversified. That I can understand, and that would be legitimate. None of that's being done. And it's a non-story on both the left and the right.
All right. Thanks, Gary. Do we have time for one last
sure.
issue?
Yep,
all right. Well, I saw this really alarming article this morning, and I thought maybe, Gary, you'd have some good commentary on it. It's about how the CDC is predicting that diabetes will at least double in cases by 2050 and perhaps even triple the amount of cases for diabetes by that point in time. And, you know, Gary, I was thinking maybe you could give some tips to the listeners and just, you know, really how to prevent this and, you know, the healthy way to prevent yourself from diabetes.
Well, I did a whole special for PBS stations on this very topic this summer. In fact, I was in Atlanta on PBS, and I was in Denver on PBS. I'd rather take that time now, because we have our guest coming up, and I want to do a little commentary for a moment. Do we have any copies of Diabetes, No More Diabetes here?
The book?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we just got some more in, as a matter of fact.
Okay. And we have copies of the DVD?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do this. For people who really want to know what to do about diabetes, heart disease, depression, overweight, and fatigue, all of which are interconnected, because if you have one, you're susceptible to all. So when I wrote the book not just for people who are currently diabetic, but for all the people who are pre-diabetic and don't know they're diabetic. If you're overweight, there's about an 80% chance you're pre-diabetic. You're going to have elevated C-reactive protein, homocysteine, inflammatory markers. You're going to have damage to the arteries. You're going to have plaque being laid down, amyloid plaque in the brain. You're going to have more inflammation in your eyes, more susceptibility to macular degeneration, cataracts, and glaucoma. You're going to be more susceptible to fibromyalgia, insomnia, gastrointestinal disturbances, too much putrefying bacteria. All that comes when you are pre-diabetic. When you're diabetic, oh, you're greater risk of heart attack, stroke, cancer. So what I did was I looked at everything, and I created actual protocols, recipes, very important is a list. I think there are about 6 pages of just here are the foods that are high, medium, and low on the glycemic index. You only want to eat the low glycemic foods. Sometimes it's surprising which ones are low and which ones are high. Plus how to detoxify and how to rebalance your blood chemistry. In fact, if I just saw it yesterday, I had a person applying for a job in yesterday as one of the nutritionists at the store, and they didn't have a background, unfortunately. But I showed them, well, can you really do something about, you know, diabetes? And I went onto the computer and I got up the testimony of the physician who was on 7 medications and diabetic for 20 years, on no medications, no longer diagnosed diabetics. And I said, now show me any other doctor in the country who can say this. Say they can took a patient on 7 medications, diabetic for 20 years, and today they're normal in 6 months. They can't, but we can. So let's do this. People who want to reverse diabetes, prevent diabetes, help others with diabetes or heart disease, let them call in and get the book and the video, $70 for $30. That'll help Progressive Radio Network and helps them. I just got word that we have 68 copies of the book. All right, so 68 people can call in. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. For $30, you get a $70 value. You're getting a video and a long video. It's real long. I think it's 3.5 hours. And you're getting a book with everything in it, A to Z, on diabetes. Okay?
Thanks, Gary.
All right. One quick comment before we go to my guests, and that is, last night, President Obama appeared on Jon Stewart on Comedy Central, and he made a comment about how proud he was of Lawrence Summers, his top economic advisor, the former head of Harvard, the former top person at the World Bank, the former Secretary of the Treasury under Bill Clinton. But somehow, Obama forgot to mention that it was Larry Summers, along with his friend Robert Rubin, and his protege, current Secretary of the Treasury, Timothy Geithner, along with Phil Graham and Bill Clinton, who caused all of our economic problems today by what their deregulations and did. So what I would have said if I was Mr. Stewart, I would have said, President Obama, you're happy, you're even not just happy, you're proud of Lawrence Summers. Take a look at the depression-level job list that we have. 1 in 6 Americans are either unemployed or underemployed. 44 million Americans live in abject poverty. 1 in 7 adults receives food stamps. 51 million Americans are without health insurance. And over 50 million Americans need food stamps to eat. And 50% of U.S. children, that's 50% of U.S. children, will use food stamps before they're 18. 20,000 people are added to this total every day. And just last year, 1 out of 5 U.S. households didn't have enough money to buy food. In households with children, this number rose to 24%. And as the hungry rate in American citizens increases, we're at an all-time high. 5 million American families lost their homes. That's 20 million people. 13 million U.S. families are going to lose their homes. That means that you'll have almost 70 million Americans who lived in homes who won't within the next 2 years. 25% of all mortgages are underwater, and every day, 10,000 more homes go into foreclosure. And all this because the man that you consider your hero used no ethics in looking at the social and human cost to greed. Billions upon billions of dollars have flowed through the hands of companies that have been influenced by Larry Summers and his colleagues. These are always people who are in alliance, power to accumulate wealth. There is an unprecedented level of inequality, and with that, hardship and human suffering. And all that was due to these people and the people on Wall Street that they represent. The politics and values of politicians, they're neo-feudal. They look at what they can do with the power they have, and they do not consider the implications. There is no moral direction in these people. They remind me of the Rothschilds and the Carnegies and the Mellons. These are the current robber barons, and they have two mottos: make themselves invisible and therefore unaccountable, rule from behind, put the talking heads on the media, set up corrupt politics, get the lobbyist, maintain monopolies. This is how they rule. Market forces create insecurity and fear. So keep people afraid. Try to deregulate everything. Privatize and commodify everything else. And they managed to have one more cherry on top of their sundae, Citizens United decision, which in my opinion was the worst decision the Supreme Court's made in its entire history. It gave the insurance giants, the energy companies, the hedge funds, the Wall Street banksters, all the power they need now to elect whoever they want. So, I would have had a different opinion in a different way. I would have spoken with President Obama. Let's go to my guest who's standing by now. My guest is Jean Carper. She is one of our country's most seasoned medical journalists, focusing on health, nutrition, and a New York Times bestselling author. And her most recent book is 100 Simple Things You Can Do to Prevent Alzheimer's and Age-Related Memory Loss. Nice to have you with us today, Jean.
Great to be here, Gary. Thank you.
Jean, let's go right through the idea that you have positive suggestions. I am not an advocate, nor as a scientist do I have any confidence that there is a gene that predicts any of these conditions. And yet we are being led to believe that it's the gene that we should be honoring, and I'm saying no. The gene is no more powerful than the environment to which you expose it. So let's go through the exposure, and let's go through your list and see what we can do to help people today. They've got pens and paper ready or computers ready. Just zip through your, at least get through as many of your ideas as possible.
Okay, this will be reading 100. Well, anyway, you don't want to drink too much alcohol. That kills your brain cells. Maybe drinking a little bit of alcohol, mainly red wine, might help a bit. There are studies showing that alpha-lipoic acid actually may boost memory in aging animals and consequently also in aging humans. If you're going in for surgery, you better ask about the anesthesia. There's considerable evidence that certain kinds of anesthesia may promote dementia and Alzheimer's. Have your blood pressure checked. There are tests that can do that, having to do with your ankle and all kinds of other cardiovascular tests. And if you help your heart, you're bound to help your brain. So look after your heart, and your brain is going to follow. There's some suggestion of really interesting stuff that some Alzheimer's may be related to infections, and in some cases people who take antibiotics, although it's unknown what kind, and I'm not suggesting you go out and take antibiotics to prevent Alzheimer's, but there's evidence that people who are more apt to take antibiotics may have a lower risk of Alzheimer's. One of the big things, eat antioxidant-rich foods. And that means all the highly colored ones, the blueberries, the carrots, the deep grape, grapes, and everything that has a deep color is full of antioxidants. There is considerable evidence, however, that a gene called the APOE4, which I actually possess also, does raise your risk of developing Alzheimer's about three times. And if you have that particular gene, there may be certain things that you want to look after more fervently than other people. Apples look tremendous. Apple juice, the bad fats are bad. I eat berries every day. That's a great thing. People don't realize that they actually can grow new brain cells, and the trick is not only to grow the new brain cells, but to keep them alive. And so if you do lose brain cells, as everybody does when they get older, you can get a bigger brain by eating the right foods and getting exercise. Exercise is absolutely fantastic for keeping your brain in better shape. And when you exercise, especially aerobic exercise, scientists have discovered that it's just like putting Miracle-Grow over your brain cells, and they actually spurt up there and grow and are bigger and better and have better communications. Better be wary of blood sugar. High blood sugar is detrimental to your brain. Studies have shown that coffee and caffeine, actually, the people who get an amount of that, those two actually are less likely to have Alzheimer's. Chocolate looks really good for the brain by boosting blood flow in the brain. These studies have been done at Harvard. I say Harvard people, if they tell you they're messing with chocolate, I think there's something to it. There are a lot of midlife factors that you have later contribute to the development of Alzheimer's, and that's cholesterol, having high cholesterol in midlife, having high blood pressure, insulin resistance, diabetes, all of those may predispose you to Alzheimer's later in life. And I especially want to say something about smoking. That's an interesting connection. A brand new study out showing that people who are heavy smokers are in younger years are double the risk of having Alzheimer's as they get older. And one of the interesting things here is that for some time there were actually some scientists who were saying that smoking was good for you and benefited your brain and reduced the risk of Alzheimer's, but this was because of the well-known tricks of the tobacco industry. A latest study found that the studies that showed that smoking was good for you were actually funded by the tobacco industry. So it is absolute garbage. Smoking can really increase your risk of dementia and Alzheimer's. And also, as I said earlier, heavy drinking, especially binge drinking. And actually, studies have been shown that among older people, heavy drinking is a much bigger cause of dementia and Alzheimer's than people ever thought. Want to do something good for your brain? Get out there and eat curry foods. India, for example, has one of the lowest rates of Alzheimer's disease, and many scientists, including some at UCLA, have said they believe, and studies show, that the constituents in curry powder, something called curcumin, actually helps protect the brain against Alzheimer's. There's something called the DASH diet that is recommended for people to reduce high blood pressure. That looks also very good in warding off Alzheimer's. If you have certain treatable diseases, you should be very aware that these can predispose you to Alzheimer's. And a big one is depression. If you have major depression and you do not get it treated, your chances of developing Alzheimer's just about double. Diabetes also. Interestingly, it's good to be kind of easygoing and upbeat, and studies show that certain personality factors, including conscientiousness and wanting to socialize, being an extrovert, actually will help protect you against Alzheimer's.
Jean, hold your thoughts for just a moment.
Yes.
We have plenty of time, but we're going to say goodbye to our WMYE audience. They can continue listening by going to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or GaryNoll.com. Jean Carper, my guest, we're talking about preventing Alzheimer's disease. Please continue, Jean.
Oh, okay. I said be an extrovert. That looks really good. It's very interesting. They find that even people with considerable brain deterioration, who have big social circles, seem to show fewer symptoms and later symptoms of Alzheimer's. Interestingly, you want to have your eyes checked. Studies show that having eye procedures, correcting your vision in later life can help protect you against Alzheimer's. Fast food, not good for you. You knew that already. Not good for your brain. But eating fatty fish, then that's salmon and sardines. Sardines are just one of my favorites. Getting that good omega-3 into your brain can reduce your risk of Alzheimer's. Studies show that the B vitamins are incredibly important in protecting your brain. That's folic acid, also B12 and B6. And there was a recent study done that showed taking moderate doses of those three actually reduced the amount of brain shrinkage in a clinical trial, a controlled clinical trial in people who were beginning to have memory problems. So those doses were that they used that were protective against memory loss was 500 micrograms of B12, 800 micrograms of folic acid, and 20 milligrams of B6. So if you want a really inexpensive way to do something about protecting your memory, the B vitamins are great, because I figure that it would cost you like $5 a month to get those doses. That's $60 a year for some considerable protection against Alzheimer's. A good thing to have, good H-straw. You've probably read about people who have head injuries, NFL football players and others who engage in contact sports actually have greater risk of dementia. That seems to be true. So you really want to watch. I think we need to protect our youth against some of these head injuries in contact sports. I'm talking about kids in junior high and high school. There's evidence that keeping your homocysteine levels normal, that's an amino acid in the bloodstream, and it's sometimes related to heart disease, but evidence shows that high levels of homocysteine may increase your risk of Alzheimer's. Nothing worse than inactivity, being a couch potato. You need to fight that like crazy and get up and do anything. I mean, you probably may have heard that, the treadmill is great, all kinds of aerobic exercise is great, but even moving anytime. There was a study that I talked about, just be a busybody. I mean, keep your body moving, and even the remotest amount of activity is better than no activity. It's good if you have an interesting job. People who have to stretch their minds in their jobs actually seem to have a lower risk. I forgot to mention education, but higher education, people who have a higher education go on to college, for example, and even beyond into other getting other degrees, do have some protection against the onset of Alzheimer's. Being lonely is not a good thing. Being lonely and isolated can actually make you more likely to get dementia as you get older. If you're married, that's a good thing. In the studies, they don't say anything about how good your marriage is, but being married, having a significant other, does protect you against Alzheimer's. One of the ones that the eating meat, studies show, there was a worldwide study showed that people who ate a lot of meat had a 20% higher risk of Alzheimer's. Practicing meditation seems to have a profound effect on keeping your brain healthy. And studies were showing that people who did meditation, even 10, 20 minutes a day, seemed to get protection against Alzheimer's. And you've undoubtedly heard about staying mentally active. Now, there's a caveat here. you know, if you are a person who whizzes through a lot of crossword puzzles, actually I can't do them, and Scrabble and all that, and you're so good at it, you just whiz through and it's no challenge to your brain, it's not doing your brain any good. In order for you to get the benefits of mental activity, you have to make a mental effort. And often that means just going and learning or doing anything new. Your brain just lights up when you do something new. Your brain loves novelty, and it helps build better brain cells. So when they say keep mentally active, it means make an effort. Do something you haven't done or something that's going to challenge you. And that's what keeps your brain cells alive.
We're out of time. I want to thank you. You went through most of your list.
Jean, I think I only made it through 60.
JeanCarper.com, 100 simple things you can do to prevent Alzheimer's and memory loss. All the best to you, Jean.
Thank you.
I'm Gary Knoll. Next up here on The Turning Point with Mike Fader. And at a bar on the Upper East Side, having downed a few power drinks, this attractive woman turns around, faces this man, looks him straight in the eyes and says, "Listen, you're good looking. I screw anybody, anytime, anywhere. Your place, my place, in a car, front door, back door, on the ground, standing up, sitting down, naked or with clothes on. It doesn't matter to me. I just love it." Eyes now wide with interest, he responds, "No kidding. I'm in Congress, too. What state you from?" Have a good day.
The Gary Knoll Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.
When Jesus wore,
Jesus
wore, oh, when he wore,
Jesus wore,
when Jesus wore.